Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. You know, if you're self-employed and you're paying that advertised 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract the $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying your 17% income tax on the full $50,000 twice? But you know, the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 once in Social Security taxes. Then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax twice. So that means you pay 17% of the $7,650 Social Security tax two times. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everybody else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company did that, charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? Hey, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Hey, last time I almost ran over time. Got to talking here about socialization, this homeschooling versus, public school. And why is it that the public school teachers and administrators and politicians are so opposed to homeschool? Well, because it's grown from just a handful of people in 1980, a few thousand, to 4 million today. 4 million. And it's growing 20% a year. And every kid that leaves the public school system costs them $56 a day. They're not interested in your kids' education. They're interested in their own retirement and their own paychecks. It's money. And I showed you that last time. Well, approximately 4 million children currently being homeschooled in the United States, along with a 15 to 20% yearly growth rate, many professional educators and school boards are concerned that this exodus will keep funds from entering the public school system. And many teachers also believe that successful home instruction by these uncredentialed, underlined, uncredentialed parents undermines their expertise and it jeopardizes their jobs. Questions about inadequate socialization are often brought up as a means to disqualify homeschooling as a viable alternative form of education. But are their arguments valid? Well, a look at the research on this socialization debate shines further light on this issue. You know, there's no place like home. So why is there such a dichotomy in the socialization experience between homeschoolers and conventional students? Well, it all has to do with the learning environment. The National Home Education Research Institute disclosed that the 36 to 54 hours that students spend in school and school-related weekly activities make peers and adults outside of the home the primary influences in children's lives, not their parents. So the primary influence in your child's life isn't you, 'tain't your wife, 'tisn't your other family members, it's the teachers and their peers. Now, realizing the harm that this constant exposure can produce, especially if it isn't countered by involved parenting, most homeschoolers are well aware of their children's need for close one-to-one contact throughout the education process. You know, Jesus understood the importance of continual intimate contact with his students as he ate, slept, and fellowshipped with his disciples 24 hours a day. It's unlikely that Jesus would have entrusted their training to paid professionals like theologians down at the local church or seminary. So how do these different settings affect children? Well, Dr. Thomas Smedley believes that homeschoolers have superior socialization skills, and his research supports his claim. He conducted a study in which he administered the Vineyard Adaptive Behavior Scales test to identify mature and well-adapted behaviors in children. Home learners ranked in the 84th percentile compared to publicly schooled students who were drastically lowered in the 23rd percentile. So if you want to know how mature your children are going to be, if you want your children to act and behave like adults and grown-ups, doesn't it make sense that you should educate them around adults and grown-ups? If you educate your children around other children, their peers, who act like fools and dunces, don't you think your children are going to behave like fools and dunces? And if you educate your children around mature adults or other mature young adults that they're going to emulate, and that they're going to behave like those other mature adults or mature young adults? Well, that's what this good doctor discovered. So welcome to the real world here, boys and girls. Many school socialization advocates argue that homeschooling precludes children from experiencing real life. Instead of being locked behind school gates in what some would consider an artificial setting characterized by bells, forced silence, and age segregation, homeschoolers frequently extend their everyday classroom to fire departments, hospitals, museums, repair shops, city halls, national parks, churches and colleges, where real people in real community interaction are living their lives and doing their work, and where real life contacts are actually made. All right, let's think about that for a second. I'm going to put a little bracket around that. You're going to lock this kid up in a public school, which is an artificial setting, and then it's characterized by bells, forced silence, and age segregation. Is that the way the real world works? When you go out to places like hospitals, fire departments, and repair shops, do we have bells, forced silence, and age segregation? In any of those places? The answer is no. That's not the way the real world works. You know it, and I know it. So to say that if you lock this kid up in a school where they now have guards searching you. When was the last time you walked into Walmart and there was a guard there searching you for drugs? Or going out in the parking lot and searching your car for drugs or contraband or guns? That's what they do in public school, you know. Dismantling the stereotype that home learners spend their days isolated from society at kitchen tables with workbooks in hand. The NHERI reports that they actually participate in approximately 5 different social activities outside the home on a regular basis. Let me pause here for a moment, put another bracket around that. Our daughter, when she was homeschooled here, when my wife would go to Springfield, she would take the daughter with her, and then she would go to the gold broker and cash in some gold to get some cash to go down to Walmart, maybe. And then the daughter would go to the gold broker, and she could watch a gold transaction. And then she could go to Walmart, and then she could watch shopping being done. And then she could go with the wife to the various errands, you know, such things as paying the telephone bill and paying the power bill. And then they would go to lunch, maybe. And my daughter would learn how to order lunch from Hemingway's or some other restaurant. You know, usually an upscale restaurant. You want to teach some manners and skills to your children. My wife does not eat at McDonald's. She eats at Hemingway's. I don't think we're total snobs, but, you know, we don't eat the kind of food that the average Joe Six-Pack American eats over here at Burger King, McDonald's, and Wendy's. So, my daughter learned skills and abilities, and they spent a lot of time in museums. You know, when we were on the road, I can tell you that daughter has been to every state in the Union except Hawaii and Alaska. In my travels, in my school, in my work, I have traveled every state in the Union and every state capital. My children didn't, but they made 48 states and 48 state capitals. And when we would arrive in a state capital, you know, like Jefferson City or Dover, Delaware, or, you know, Albany, New York, we would take them to the state capital. And in Oklahoma City, you know, we went into the state capital. So they can get a feel for, well, this is the way the real world works. Now, how many of your high school kids spend any time in the state capitals? Yeah, it's true. The children here in Missouri, a lot of them go up to Jeff City, and they go into the state capitol. Now, how many of these students here in Missouri have been to all 48 state capitals in the lower 48? Huh? Well, there you are. Now, I got to tell you that homeschoolers are not socially deprived. At least, you know, the ones I know of aren't. And they're out doing real-world work, you know. They're going out with Dad cutting firewood. They're going out with Dad on his job. Maybe he's a machinist. You know, students, children, young people, you know, they used to learn the skills that their dads had. A blacksmith would teach his boys to be blacksmiths. A carpenter would teach his sons to be carpenters. And, you know, and so on down the line. I did that with mine. I said, hey, let me take you out here and show you how to do this, that, and another thing. Here on the farm, Amish people, you know, they take their children out in the field, teach them how to hitch up a team of horses, teach them how to gather the eggs and how to milk the cows and fix the fence. And so they're not ignorant. There isn't an Amish kid 8 years old that doesn't know where babies come from. Not a one. In fact, I'd be surprised if you found an Amish kid who was retarded enough at age 8 didn't know. I mean, he had to be a retard. And I'd go out here and ask the average 8-year-old kid, you know, to explain to him how calves are born or where milk comes from and so on. See what you get. Now, when most home educators and school administrators speak of successful socialization, they're referring to the same thing. And education researcher Dr. Michael Mitchell found that being popular, aggressively competitive, materialistically driven, and self-confident are traits promoted in conventional schools. Now, furthermore, researcher Dr. Linda Montgomery found that 78% of high school home learners were employed with paying jobs, while a majority engaged in volunteering and community service. Research presented at the National Christian Home Educators Leadership Conference divulged that homeschool graduates far exceeded their public and private school counterparts in college by ranking the highest in 42 of 63 indicators of collegiate success. They were also ranked as being superior in 4 out of 5 achievement categories, including socialization, as they were assessed as being the most charismatic and influential. Well, that's because homeschoolers aren't being constantly herded together with bells and whistles and influenced by their peers. You know, their other 8-year-old and 9-year-old and 10-year-old kids around them. They're interacting with Uncle Buster and Aunt Bessie and with Dad's employer or with Dad's employees. They're out working in the real world with real adults in real life circumstances. That's what homeschool's all about. It's not sitting at the kitchen table trying to memorize words and fractions. In fact, my wife was telling me the other day that when our children learned fractions, they learned it while they were baking pies and making cakes and cooking in the kitchen. That's where fractions are actually used in the real world. When you're putting a teaspoon of this into 3 cups of that, and so on and so on. Well, going on here, Dr. Mitchell, his study shows that these campus ideals are discouraged by Christian home educators in favor of building their children's character and dismantling selfish ambitions. Integrity, responsibility, respect for others, trust in God, biblical soundness, and an amiable disposition top the ideal social qualities that they desired their youth to embody. You know, college is probably all right. It's a real life experience, and maybe you'd want to send your kid to college. I personally wouldn't. I didn't send mine there. There's enough bad influence in the world without putting them in there for 4 years to have them taught and trained in filth and perversion, but, you know, everybody's got his own beliefs along those lines. I just said, well, I think my kid can learn enough filth and perversion without being specifically trained in it. So that's where that story's at. But, you know, if you wanted to send your kid to college over here in a real-life experience, you'll find that the homeschooled student will make a better college student and be better socially adjusted to the real world than the college students. And that's why many of these colleges actually solicit, look for, and advertise for homeschool students to come to college. They can read and write. Yeah, they can read and write before they get to college. Well, at least at the third grade level. Now, many Christians who homeschool believe that the greatest socialization of their children, or that their children can have, is to be trained to emulate Jesus, who is a servant of man. Home educators examined by Mitchell strive to dismantle these selfish ambitions, self-aggrandizement seen in their children, as opposed to cultivating them. Getting ahead of one's peers is not consistent with Jesus' urging in Matthew 20, verses 25 through 28, which calls for Christians to seek a lowly and servile role to those around them. However, this does not mean that Christians are called to underachieve, as Colossians 3:23 exhorts readers to push for peak performance in every ambition, every endeavor, but for the glory of God rather than for the selfish ambition of men. Now, pride is also promoted in public schools, and it's often repackaged as self-esteem in programs such as Here's Looking at You 2000, in which education researcher Dr. Amy Binder reports that students are instructed to believe that they are the most important person in the world. Many Christian home educators assert that the kind of pride being taught in the public schools is discouraged throughout Scripture by Jesus and Paul, who preached against lifting oneself up or putting oneself first in favor of assuming a lowly position among others, as seen in Luke 14, 10 and 11, and Romans 12, verse 3. And they often contend that traditional students in public school are driven to achieve high marks in order to attain lucrative and prestigious jobs that can lead to lives of self-indulgence, while the Bible calls man not to be overcome by material concerns. So even though God enjoys prospering his children, he also warns us in 1 Timothy 6:10 that the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And in fact, cheating in public school is looked upon as being normal and natural behavior. Everybody does it. It's actually theft and a violation of the Ten Commandments. Now, negative socialization. The mass socialization conducted within schools has brought about a proliferation of delinquent behavior within this nation's youth, reports education researcher Dr. Michael Slavinsky. And he notes that student bodies are increasingly riddled with violence, drugs, promiscuity, emotional disorders, crime, contempt for authority, desperate behavior, illiteracy, and peer dependency, just to name a few. Today, parents are not as surprised to see reports of fifth graders having sex in class, or hear about school shootings, find drugs or condoms in backpacks, receive phone calls from the police and principals, or witness defiant, apathetic, and unrecognizable tones in their children's voices. Live and let learn, say many parents. Most home educators are fine with this as long as their children's learning comes from mature, seasoned, and embracing adults who have the children's best interests at heart, above political or economic agendas. And they believe that such training shouldn't come from peers either, which amounts to the blind leading the blind. Now, when the direct observation form of the child behavior checklist was administered by education researcher Dr. Larry Shires to identify 97 problematic behaviors in two groups of children. Traditionally schooled students exuded 8 times as many antisocial traits than their homeschooled counterparts. This lies in direct contrast to claims by public school advocates that exposure to campus life leads to proper socialization. Now, let's take a look at, well, what is proper socialization? Maybe premarital sex. Maybe such things as violence, drugs, promiscuity, emotional disorders, crime, contempt for authority, desperate behavior, illiteracy, and peer dependency. Maybe that is normal behavior, and maybe that is what we want to achieve. Because if it is, you can't find a better place than public school to achieve that. Now, most of us are sitting over here saying, no, we don't want crime. We don't want drug. We don't want peer dependency. Well, public school then isn't the place that you want to send your kid because that's what he's going to get there. Now, notice these statistics. Notice these experts over here. Now, let's listen to who it is that's opposed to homeschooling. It's the public school teachers. Now, conversely, I'm a homeschool teacher. I'm not opposed to public school. Listen, Mary, if you want to send your kid to public school, get after it. I'm not opposed to public school. Get after it. But I'm opposed to the results that come from that public school, and I took a look at it and said, I don't want to buy that. And I didn't. I stopped. I quit. I sent my children to public school. I've done that 4 or 5 times. I would even go so far as to say that it might even be a good experience for your child to go to public school for a year. I think I would wait until they got into high school. That's what I did with my children. Let them go to public school for a year so that they can see the difference between homeschool and public school, so that they can see the filth and the depravity and the perversion that goes on in public school, so that they can make a better, more evaluated decision as to how they want to continue in their life. That's what we did with Cole when she got to the, you know, later stages of education. Said, hey, why don't you go over here to public school and let's test you. Now, there was a time when she was forced into it, then toward the end there, she rejected it. She said, I can see that's just nonsense in public school. And she's smart enough to figure that out. All right, so that's negative socialization. Now, many Christian parents are concerned with homeschooling, or that homeschooling would not allow their children to fulfill the great commission of sharing the gospel with non-believers. And they often cite Matthew 5, verses 14 through 16, about being the light of the world. Some Christian homeschool parents argue that even though young believers are to reach out to the lost, and they're not called to immerse themselves daily in a hostile setting that constantly works to influence them in the ways of the world. And they recognize that those with strong Christian upbringings are still vulnerable to the ungodly climate of the schools. I can tell you this from experience. If you think you're going to take a righteous person and stick them into a perverted environment, and that righteous person is going to change the perverted environment, let's try it this way. Send your local preacher down to the local whorehouse and start preaching. Those prostitutes in there are not interested in Christian values. That's not what they're in business for. Now, send your young son, age 16, down to a whorehouse and see if he's going to convert those whores down there into fine, upstanding Christian virgins, huh? Man, have we taken leave of our senses here? You put a good apple into a barrel of rotten apples, and the rotten apples turn the good apple rotten. Put one rotten apple into a good barrel of apples, and the one rotten apple will turn the whole barrel of apples into rotten apples. The way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter. Just telling you. It's the way it is. In Proverbs 4, verses 11 through 15, King Solomon realized the vulnerability of his son, proclaiming his responsibility to train him in godly teachings and keep him from stumbling over the vices of this world. Just as parents know that children are not prepared for war, many Christians believe that youth are not equipped to fend for themselves in the spiritual warfare taking place within these public schools. A nationwide survey conducted by the Barna Group shows that 80% of Christian families send their children to public schools where their faith is attacked. Based on the study's findings, it appears that their children are the ones being evangelized by the religion of secular humanism. And more than half of their Christian teens believe Jesus actually sinned, and only 9% hold to moral absolutes, while 83% of children from committed Christian families attending public schools adopt a Marxist socialist worldview, reports the group. So, you Christians out there can send your children to public school, and 83% of the time they will be perverted to Marxist socialist worldview. You think you're going to send your kid to public school and he's going to convert those around him to the Ten Commandments or the Bill of Rights, or to our Constitution? Tain't happened yet. What makes you think it's going to happen tomorrow? Now, consistent with these figures, Christian producer and occult expert Carl Mastrosiana reports that 75% of public-schooled American youth brought up in Christian households disown their Christian faith by the first year of college. And NHERI finds that this is only true for less than 4% of homeschooled youth. Homeschooled. Most home educators would not trade the blessings that homeschooling brings their families and society for the world. Now, that's a pretty important statistic there. So you Christians, you send your children to public school, and 75% of them will reject Christian values, the Ten Commandments and Jesus, by their first year of college, but only 4% of homeschooled youth will do that. 96% won't. So now that's quite a little story there, wouldn't you say? I'd say it's quite a little story. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, let's take a look and see what else we got cooking over here. Here's an article on That's Outrageous, Notable Homeschoolers Collected. Oh, this is a good one. me whip this one out here. Remember, we talked a little bit about some notable homeschoolers, such as or people who are famous and been homeschooled. I should word it that way. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and so on. Well, here's about four or five pages of them. This is a pretty comprehensive list here of some very famous people and what they accomplished in life. Now, so many children throughout modern history have been homeschooled and then have become highly successful members of our society. You'll be amazed at some of the people from the 1700s through today who spent some or all of their time being schooled at home rather than in public schools. 2002 Geography Bee, and nearly every other year, this year's first and third place winners are homeschooled, and the winner is the youngest of the 55 contestants at only 10 years old. Two other top 10 finalists were also homeschooled. Pretty significant, I'd say. Well, here's one. Ansel Adams, 1902, died 1984, arguably the greatest photographer of the 20th century. At 12 years of age, he was unable to stand the confinement and the tedium of the classroom. He utterly disrupted his lessons with wild laughter and undisguised contempt for the inept ramblings of his teachers. Well, boys and girls today, don't we call that, A something, LD, or, you know, wouldn't we have to put that guy on Ritalin today? He was disruptive in his class, couldn't stand it, it drove him nuts. So his father decided that Ansel's formal education was best ended, and from that point forward, the boy was homeschooled in Greek, English classics, algebra, and the glories of the ocean, inlets and rocky beaches that surrounded their home near San Francisco. All right, so there's an example. You know, we call these students today, children today, you know, we say, hey, they're learning disabled. Hey, wait a minute. Let me give you a little clue there. They get $56 a day for your kid in school if he's just normal, average. If they can have that kid declared to be ADHD, you know, there's something wrong with him, handicapped, they get double that. Double that. So there's a motive behind this. So next time your teacher says, hey, your kid's disruptive in school and needs to be put on Ritalin, you just remember that every kid they put on Ritalin, they get $112 a day for. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with your child's education or your child's problem. That has to do with the school, the teachers, the administrators making money off the taxpayers. Nothing more, nothing less. It's economic, pure and simple. Your kid doesn't need Ritalin. Your kid needs you. Your kid needs home school. Needs some attention. Not a cookie-cutter education. John Adams, 1735 to 1826, second president of the United States. John Adams was taught to read at home, then happily went for lessons with a handful of other children, taught in the kitchen of a neighbor woman. He was considered fit for college and proceeded to Harvard at age 15. I don't know that John Adams was a genius. I don't know what his IQ was. But at age 15, he went to Harvard. I'm not sure that my daughter's IQ is 180 and she's a genius. She's just a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill, garden-variety child. But compared to today's dumbed-down education, if we just give her a normal education, she looks like she's a genius. John Quincy Adams, that's John Adams' son, 1767 to 1848, sixth president of the United States. The rector of the school thought him impertinent and merited a thrashing, as he informed his father, Adam's response was exactly what his own father's would have been. "Send the boys." John Quincy was 12 or 13 at the time, "to me this evening," he answered. He had no wish to see his children subjected to such littleness of soul, he explained to Abigail in a letter. Adams arranged for tutors for his two boys and the opportunity for them to attend lectures at the university. So he's got a kid here, 12 or 13. Now, I just reported last week on a series of lectures. It was a series of lectures done by a college professor in a college setting. The guy is a Seventh-day Adventist. He's an archaeologist. Remember, I gave you the dope on him. It was Professor Walter J. Veith. I cannot think of a better source of information or education for a 12 or 13-year-old kid than to say, "Hey, listen, why don't you go to some college lectures here? Forget this juvenile nonsense here in the 7th and 8th grade that you're learning over here in your public school, and send him to college. I'll guarantee you he'll learn more at age 12, 13, 14, 15 years old about the secret societies and about the Federal Reserve and the occult and about the real world around him than he's ever going to learn high school." And I saw this paragraph here. I said, now, talk about being intelligent. John Adams sent his two boys to college at age 12 and 13. He said, "Hey, go down here and sit in and listen to this college professor. You'll learn something from him. You're not going to learn anything from this school teacher up here with the college diploma and the teaching credential." Hell, half of those teachers, think about this. Why can't high school teachers teach Johnny to read? It's because they can't read. They learned how to read from look-say. They don't know how to read either. It's no wonder that Johnny can't read and Johnny can't learn. Hell, his teacher can't read and his teacher can't learn. It's the blind leading the blind. You ever heard of a name by Louisa May Alcott, author of Little Women, among others, primarily educated by her father? Alan Alda, the actor, screenwriter, and producer. Alda started college at 16 after being homeschooled. Alan Alda, remember that guy from MASH? Wilson Bentley. I never heard of Wilson Bentley. But he did pioneering work in the area of photomicrography. I haven't got a clue as to what the hell photomicrography might be. Micro means it's small. Photo means pictures. Picture, small picture, graphy. Oh, I'll bet she's taking pictures of microbes through a microscope. Most notably, his extensive work with snow crystals and snowflakes. Self-educated. He was known as the Snowflake Man by his biographer, Wilson A. Bentley. Colfax family, 1980s. Grant, Drew, Reed, and Garth. Parents David and Mickey became well known in the 1980s for homeschooling three of their sons into Harvard. The boys have gone on to become Fulbright and Rockefeller Fellows with high honors at Harvard. Homeschooled. Now, oftentimes people will say to me, "Oh my God, my kid couldn't get into college if he was homeschooled." Now remember, that's not true. Not even close. Harvard is more likely to take your kid homeschooled than he is to take a kid out of the public schools. More likely. In fact, it is more likely that he'll be rejected if he was from public school, and more likely that he will be accepted if he is from homeschool. Now, they're going to test him. So if they've got some kind of a dumb homeschooled kid, they're not going to let him into Harvard. But remember, most of these kids that are homeschooled score at the 86th percentile, and the average public school kid is going to score at the 50th percentile. And as a result of that, all they got to do is go in and take their test. The test will reveal all. There's no secrets. So don't think for a minute now that homeschooling is going to be a detriment. And as I pointed out earlier, many of these colleges advertise for. And the big Ivy League prestigious schools, listen, unless you've got lots of money, see, if you're just an average Joe Sixpack, your chances of getting into Harvard are small. If you want to get into the Harvard Law School, and you come in there as a homeschooled kid, then you can score up here at the 86th percentile. There's a greater chance that you'll get a full scholarship to Harvard and get through the Harvard Law School than if you've got an average Joe Sixpack background and you've come out of public school. Now, rich people can go to Harvard, like George Bush, our former president. I mean, that guy couldn't put a sentence together. He's about like me. I don't think that guy could talk straight now, could he? Now, as a result of that, he became president of the United States. I don't think he went to Harvard. I think he went to Yale. And he was a skull and bones man. Hell, he's got lots of money. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He couldn't miss. And Harvard takes in those types. Yale, Princeton, you know, they'll take in those. But now, if you don't have a lot of money and you've got aspirations for your kid, educate him at home. See if he's got natural talent. If he does, he'll show that. My daughter, I'm sure, could have gotten into Harvard, Yale, or Princeton if she'd have put her mind to it. She didn't, but I think she probably could have. And being homeschooled, I think she'd have had a better shot at it. Now, that's what all the statistics, that's what all these guys are telling us. Now, the Colfax boys didn't attend school, but instead were homeschooled in their 47-acre classroom. Drew completed his studies at Harvard and became a physician. So here's a guy who becomes a medical doctor. Agatha Christie, author of many, many mysteries, including Murder on the Orient Express, taught at home by a governess and tutors as a child. Agatha Christie never attended school. Edward Curtis, photographer of the early 1900s, complicated, passionate, self-educated, pioneer, and visionary artist who rose from poverty and obscurity to become the most famous photographer of his time. I never heard of him, but his name is Edward Curtis. Eric Dimony, assistant professor of computer science at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the leading theoretician in the emerging field of origami mathematics. Got me. I don't know what origami is, let alone origamic mathematics. Homeschooled by his father, traveled around the United States, settling somewhere new every 6 to 12 months. His old man must have been in construction, working from one job to the next. He started college courses at age 12. He received his doctorate at age 20. My God. A doctorate at age 20. Now, let's see. Now, he had 4 years of college. Then didn't he have to do 2 years of master's work before he could go for his PhD? Then didn't he have to spend 3 years on that PhD? I think that's 9 years. From age 12 to 20. This guy did. Let's see. What's his name again? Eric D-E-M-A-I-N-E. It's either Demaine or Dimony, one or the other. I'd guess it's Demaine. Assistant professor of computer science. Got his doctorate at age 20 and at the same age became the youngest professor ever at MIT. In 2003, he was granted a MacArthur Genius Fellowship. Now, this guy might actually be a genius and maybe is a savant or something like that, but Thomas Edison, 1847 to 1931, he was an inventor. Edison entered school in Port Huron at age 7, but his teachers considered him to be a dull student. Because of hearing problems, Edison had difficulty following the lessons, and his school attendance became sporadic. He was taught at home by his mother, a former teacher. Well, that's a help. You know, his mother was a teacher, and so she taught him at home. Paul Erdős, Hungarian mathematician. Until he reached his teens, Erdős' mother kept him out of school, fearing that it was the source of childhood contagion. Oh, she didn't want his kid to get diseased. His biography, The Man Who Loved Only Numbers, The Story of Paul Erdős and the Search for Mathematical Truth. Benjamin Franklin, printer, inventor, statesman, and more, attended grammar school from age 8 to 10. 2 years. Homeschooled. Spent 2 years in school. Gutterson family, 1980s, three sons. It is this contradiction, schooling his own children at home while teaching his neighbor's children in school, that Gutterson tries to dissect and defend in Family Matters, why homeschooling makes sense. So here is a school teacher homeschooled his children at home. That's pretty common. There's a lot of that going on that I've read in the literature. Now, remember I reported to you that 6% of the homeschooled children have parents who are teachers, who have a teaching credential. Now, there's a lot more of these homeschooled students, more than 6%, whose parents have college degrees. But even if you have a college degree, in a lot of states, they look upon you as being incompetent, unable to teach your children. Well, you don't have a teaching certificate. Well, you don't belong to the union. That's what the bottom line is. You're a scab. That's what we're bitching about. You're a scab. Cutting into our $56 a day for educating your kid, $112 if the kid's handicapped. Margaret Mead. Ever heard that name, Margaret Mead? She was an anthropologist. Here's a guy here you'll recognize. Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of the United States. He had tutors, and he was self-educated. There's a guy here by the name of Todd Ludwig. Never heard of him. He's a Nordic skier. Countess Augusta Ada Lovelace. Never heard of her. She was credited with being the first woman programmer, daughter of Lord Byron. Ada was educated at home by governesses and tutors hired by her mother. U.S. Department of Defense named the programming language ADA in her honor. What do you know about that? ADA. Ada. I don't know what that's all about, but 1852. Now, she lived from 1815 to 52. Didn't live long. 25, 35, 45. 55, she was 33 years old, and 32, 37 years old. Margaret Mead. Here's a guy named Yehudi Menuhin. He was a violinist. I think I've seen him on public TV. I went to school for precisely one day at the age of 6, Menuhin said. By which time I could read quite well and write and calculate a little. My one day was not unhappy, but bewildered. Very quietly I sat in the class. The teacher stood at the front and said incomprehensible things for a long time, and my attention eventually wandered to the window through which I could see a tree. The tree was the only detail that I remembered clearly enough to report at home that afternoon. And that was the end of my schooling. Now, this guy, Yehudi Menuhin, I think he was a Jew. Evidently, his Jewish parents recognized that school was not the place for this boy. He was a pretty famous violinist. I don't know how famous magician or musicians are ranked. I don't pay much attention to it. But I think he was right up there at the top of his profession. I don't know that he was the number one violinist in the world, but I'll bet you that he was in the top 10. Now, he didn't go to PS-235, and I bet you he made a pretty good living. I bet you that he wasn't on welfare, food stamps, aid to families with dependent children, probably able to support his family. Be my guess. Now, there's the Polgar sisters. Beatrice Potter never received a formal education. Joseph Priestley, the discoverer of oxygen and the father of modern chemistry. Well, that's pretty significant. He's also the founder of the first Unitarian Church in America. In his mid-teens, he fell seriously ill with tuberculosis, was forced to drop out of school, for a time abandoned his plan of entering the ministry. As he gathered strength after his illness, he taught himself French, Italian, and German. Then he learned Chaldean, Syrian, and Arabic. Privately, he also learned the rudiments of geometry, algebra, and mathematics. Gloria Steinem. Oh, that's a good one. All of you women's libbers out there will recognize Gloria. Feminist, writer, and co-founder of Ms. Magazine. From ages 10 to 17, attended school on an irregular basis. Rosemary Sutcliffe. Swan Family. Frank Lloyd Wright, I mentioned him earlier. Virginia Woolf. She was an author. Andrew Wythe, artist. Jamie Wythe, also an artist. His parents passed in part, this is Andrew Wythe, based in part on his frail health, made this decision about his education rather than continuing to deal with schools any longer. He attended until the third grade. Then it was thought best by his father, taught him at home. So there's some of the notable homeschooled people, and they didn't end up on the welfare rolls, and they were able to make a living and take care of themselves. Some more successful, famous people over here. I'm just going to read you some names. I got four more minutes. Listen to this. Remember this, Joseph Pulitzer, the guy that comes up, or his name is attached to the Pulitzer Prizes. Robert Frost, Irving Berlin, Whoopi Goldberg, William F. Buckley Jr., Andrew Carnegie, Charlie Chaplin, Agatha Christie, Winston Churchill, Charles Dickens, Thomas Edison, Benjamin Franklin, Florence Nightingale, Woodrow Wilson, he was a president of the United States, both of the Wright brothers, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Alexander Graham Bell, Pearl Buck, all homeschooled. General George S. Patton, Joan of Arc, Leonardo da Vinci, Wolfgang Mozart, Felix Mendelssohn, Claude Monet, William Penn, Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Robert E. Lee, Douglas MacArthur, C.S. Lewis, Hans Christian Andersen, Mark Twain, George Washington, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, John Paul Jones, Venus Williams, and Serena Williams. That's those two black tennis players. Dakota Fanning. Hey, those are some pretty famous people, wouldn't you say? All homeschooled. All able to support themselves, all good, red-blooded Americans, save for Winston Churchill. He was only half American. Yeah, I'm running out of time here, boys and girls. I think that's enough for today. That'll give you something to think about and something to tell Bill when he comes home from work tonight. Meanwhile, you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.